This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 10th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, 1,000 ways to laugh and smile. If you've ever been to our website, poetryfoundation.org, you may have seen Harriet, the blog that is named after Harriet Monroe, the founder of Poetry Magazine. And if you were lucky enough to click on Harriet a few weeks ago, you might have come across this post, which appeared without explanation.
Gui, verb, to laugh, smile, or chuckle. Gui am, verb, to laugh with a booming voice. Gui ba, verb, to laugh while crawling on the ground, usually said of children or drunkards.
It's a catalog of Vietnamese expressions for laughter and smiling, compiled by poet Lin Dinh. I'm going to speak with Lin Dinh in just a moment, but first, let's hear him read a bit more from this catalog.
Cười cầu tài, verb. To grin while kissing ass. Cười chảy nước mắt, verb. To laugh oneself into tears, usually from some absurd situation. Cười chê, verb. To laugh in contempt. Cười chúm chím, verb. To smile or laugh modestly or coquettishly, without showing teeth, said of young women. Cười cợt, verb. To laugh while goofing around. Cười cười, nói nói. Figure of speech. Laugh, laugh, talk, talk, i.e. to be loquacious. Cười giả, mếu giả. Figure of speech. To half laugh, half wear a twisted face, i.e. to be in an awkward, if not impossible, situation. Cười duyên dáng, verb. To smile charmingly, said of young women. Cười đến chết, verb. To laugh oneself to death, i.e. to laugh uncontrollably. Cười điệu, verb. To smile a rehearsed and exaggerated smile, while picturing oneself smiling, of course, said of young women.
Lin Dinh, I don't suppose the answer to this question really matters, but do you think of this as a list or as a poem?
You just said it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, but the wording of the definitions is so elegant that I get a feeling that it's yours, and you didn't just pull that from a Vietnamese English dictionary.
Sure. So in a sense, it's very self-conscious, and it's more of a parody of dictionary definitions than actual definitions. And you can see how I at a certain point, I really went overboard.
Mom, mem, verb. To smile earnestly, yet pathetically, without teeth, forcing unpropped lips to gargle nostalgically a mouthful of exhausted air, said of old people.
But the word mom mem in Vietnamese does mean mouth without teeth. So this is already funny in the original, but I sort of elaborate on it.
I'm assuming that they are in regular use among Vietnamese.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah? Sure.
The subtlety of these variations on ways to laugh, what does it tell us about Vietnamese culture or about Vietnamese language for that matter?
Anything that has to do with the body, the language is very rich. But anything that cannot be readily seen, even things inside the body, then you see many more borrowed words.
Huh.
But the more basic, earthier, body center words are Vietnamese.
One gets the feeling that it's a culture that, just based on this list, I who know nothing about this, but based on your list, it's a culture that is very good at observing facial expressions and what somebody's intent is.
Yeah. Most Vietnamese, even now, don't have their own private rooms. They live with each other. There's just no privacy. You know, the dark side of this is there's a lot of dissimulation.
Right.
You know, people don't quite say what they think.
Well, it sounds like this is an incredible toolkit, just this one list you've been reading from, of ways to read through that dissimulation, to find out what people are really thinking when they laugh.
Also, I remember reading an essay from, I think, 1920 or something by a Vietnamese modernist, and he was talking about how Vietnamese tend to smile too much. You know, they laugh all the time, inappropriately, in any situation. And then I remember reading an account by an American writer, but I can't remember his name. I think he was a journalist, but he was covering the Vietnam War, and he was talking about how the South Vietnamese soldiers, even when they were injured, would smile at the camera, and he thought that was very odd.
Yeah.
So those two observations, one by a Vietnamese, one by a foreigner, alert me to the fact that maybe there's something
peculiar about the Vietnamese habit of laughing and smiling.
Uh-huh. Now, you grew up in Vietnam and you came to the U.S. in 1975, and you write poetry in both Vietnamese and in English. How do you decide which language you're going to write in?
I returned to Vietnam in 99 and to stay for 2.5 years straight. Mm-hmm. So before that, I couldn't write in Vietnamese. So my Vietnamese improved after I had returned to live there as an adult.
Right.
And I think I wanted to connect, to reconnect to that culture and that society. And it was also a challenge because it was difficult for me at first.
I'm sure.
Just as it was difficult for me to write in English initially. So,
yeah.
You know, I like the fact that I don't have a natural claim to English or Vietnamese, for that matter. The fact that I'm sort of suspended, the fact that I'm sort of faking it. I mean, even just reading the Smile and Laugh piece,
yeah.
You notice I mispronounce a few words. And, you know,
sure.
it wasn't... I do that even today, and it used to really annoy me because I've lived here how many years now? I mean, almost 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, a writer is someone who's supposed to have a full command of his language. You know, he's supposed to be some sort of a master or something. And I know I'm nowhere near that. You know, I mispronounce the simplest words sometimes,
uh-huh.
In Vietnamese and English. So... But instead of, you know, giving up and saying, look, you know, I have no business writing, I find that somehow grimly humorous, you know, the fact that I can get sort of get away with it.
Cười ra nước mắt, figure of speech. To laugh when one should be crying, i.e. to laugh bitterly. Cười rui, verb. To laugh at some hidden amusement or joke, or for no reason at all. Cười té đái. Verb, to piss one's pants laughing.
So you've been writing some poems in Vietnamese, and I asked you to choose one or two that you've written in Vietnamese and translated into English. And I wonder if you could read The Difficulties of Poetry, it's called.
Sure.
Is there anything you want to say about this poem before you read it?
Well, this poem comes from my book, Borderless Bodies, and there is a Vietnamese website that updates every day. I don't even know of an English literary webzine that does that. So
poetryfoundation.org.
Yeah, but do they have new poems? They don't have new poems every day, do they?
No, you're right. You're right.
See, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. This website would have poems every day. So I would send in something in the morning and maybe a couple hours later see it up already. So there is a danger in writing that quickly. And submitting that quickly because, you know, you don't have time to fuss over things and reflect on, you know, what you just done. But anyway, I use that as a sort of a challenge. At first, I would send them a poem a day and sometimes two poems a day, and it got up to like maybe four or five poems a day. So
wow.
Just because it was just so fun to see it up immediately,
yeah,
right?
I can imagine, yeah. Very satisfying.
Right. So the English title is called The Difficulties of Poetry.
Những trắc trở của thi ca. Bài thơ này được viết dưới nước, trong một bong bóng sắt bao quanh, bởi những con cá mù không giới tính.
This poem was written underwater, in a steel bubble surrounded by blind and asexual fish. This poem was composed jointly by a deaf man and a mute woman, two strangers tied together naked, in a dusty, abandoned house. This poem was not written but flung onto the tent wall of a field hospital by a soldier about to die. This poem was incised in concrete, in sub-freezing temperature, in complete darkness. This poem was sketched with tinted dirt. No, it was transmitted with bird sounds by a decomposing corpse. This poem has not been written under the best of conditions. The lamp had a green bias. The day was overcast.
So when you submitted that to that website, did you get a response out of it?
Yeah, I did. But at one point, there was a sort of a negative response because people were so sick of like having five of my poems every day. So, but I didn't care. I just kept doing until I ran out of gas. Yeah.
Uh-huh. There's another poem that you sent me. It's a very short one called Language and Meat. And I'm wondering if I can get you to read that in Vietnamese first and then in English.
Oh, sure.
Ngôn ngữ và thịt. Ngôn ngữ xuất phát từ thịt. không thịt, không ngôn ngữ. Điều này quá hiển nhiên. Những từ như bùi, dai hay rắn chắc chẳng hạn.
Before I read the English version, I should say that there is a few discrepancies between these two versions. When I translate myself, so to speak, I take more liberty because, after all, it's my poem. So,
yeah, you
so,
can, yeah.
Right, exactly. So in a way, I'm rewriting it
right, somewhat.
A bilingual listener would notice the discrepancies between these two versions.
I think it'll go right by me.
Okay.
Language and meat. Language comes from meat. Without meat, there's no language. It's too obvious. Meaty words shape and roll by a meaty tongue, such as tender, juicy, or slice, for example, would be meaningless without the muscles, tendons, and fat that wrap around bones. Words such as dead, lovely, haggard, touch, desire, or satisfaction. Further, everyday language is overstuffed with meat. Don't you slander my meat, a piece of meat. She turned down such prime meat.
So it has a wonderful twist. All of a sudden, it's a poem about disappointment and love at the end, and we don't know that until the very end.
Yeah. Again, like these poems were written so fast, and I try not to fuss so much, and in a sense, I'm trusting in my, I guess, my subconscious to do the work and, you know, not be, I don't predetermine too much what the poem is going to be. I just sort of have a sort of a theme or an image and just sort of improvise from there and just leave it.
So you didn't know when you started this poem that it was going to be a poem about disappointed love?
No, no. And I even know until you just told me just now because because once it's done, it's over. It's done, yeah.
They may have been quickly written, but they don't seem it. Thanks so much, Lynn.
Thanks for having me.
Lynn Denn is the author of two collections of stories, four books of poems, and a novel, Love Like Hate, scheduled to be released next year by Seven Stories Press. You can read his past blog entries on Harriet, the blog of poetryfoundation.org. You can also hear him as a regular guest on Poem Talk, a podcast distributed by poetryfoundation.org that comes out of the Kelly Writers House at the University of Pennsylvania. We always want to hear what you think of this program. Write a review in the iTunes store or email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.